Samuel, chapter 61. The Israelites were living in anxious and distressing days. The Philistines ruled over them, having complete control over them. Shiloh, which was laid waste by the Philistines, lay quiet and deserted. In former times, during the great feasts, a pleasant bustle had prevailed there, but that is gone forever. The Ark of the Covenant stood in Abinadab's house in Kirjath-Jearim. Undoubtedly, the tabernacle had been brought to Nob. But the most sorrowful thing was, the Lord was silent. Year after year passed by. The Israelites longed for a change, looking for relief. They looked for deliverance from the Philistines, but everything remained as it was. The terrible oppression lasted 20 years. Are not the consequences of sin terrible? The Israelites could have lived in peace and prosperity if they had not forsaken the Lord. God would have blessed and preserved them, but the Israelites had shamefully forgotten their God, the God of their fathers, and all this misery was the result of their sins. They had no riches, but they had poverty, no prosperity, but adversity, no freedom, but oppression, no gladness, but misery and sadness. Finally, yes, finally, the Israelites returned to the Lord. They began to pray to their God. They humbly prayed to Him for deliverance. The Lord heard them, and He has sent them a judge. This judge was Samuel. He was to be their last judge. Samuel is no longer a boy, but he has become a man. We do not know what Samuel did or where he lived during the 20 years of Israel's oppression. We do know that he had married and at the time of our story was living in Ramah. Samuel spoke to the people, telling them to break in pieces the strange gods, the idols, and to demolish the altars, for during all this time the heathen idols were being worshipped. The children of Israel listened to the preaching of Samuel and did what he said. We read in God's word that they served the Lord only. The village of Mizpah lay approximately in the center of Canaan, close to Ramah, where Samuel lived. One day the Israelites gathered at Mizpah. Samuel had sent messengers throughout the entire country, calling the rulers and all the people to come. Here Samuel prayed to the Lord for relief and deliverance. The Israelites were grieved because of their sins of idolatry. They asked God to forgive them their transgressions. Suddenly, a few people came running toward them. They were panting, and anxiety could be seen upon their faces. They cried aloud, "The enemy is drawing near. The Philistines are approaching with a large army." And so it is. The princes of the Philistines had heard that the Israelites were gathered together, and they thought, "Why are they gathered together? What is the meaning of this? Could it be that they want to rebel against us? We will cure them of their tricks immediately. We will be one step ahead of them." They quickly mustered their soldiers and marched to Mizpah, armed heavily with bows and arrows, with swords and spears. Their plan was to attack the Israelites by surprise. It readily can be understood how frightened the Israelites were when they heard these tidings. It becomes still as death. They scarcely had any weapons. Oh, and they trembled with fear. They quickly looked at Samuel, who remained calm and composed. Oh, they said, pray to the Lord for us. Ask him to help us. While Samuel prayed, it was very quiet. All listened reverently. Afterward, Samuel took a lamb, a very young lamb, and offered it as a burnt offering to the Lord. The Lord saw this and heard Samuel's supplication, and the Philistines arrived with their enormous army, expecting to disperse this large assembly of people and to kill as many as they can. Suddenly the heavens darkened. Thick dark clouds floated overhead, while the rumble of thunder was heard in the distance. Quickly this thunderstorm approached. The bolts of lightning followed each other rapidly, and the thunderclaps rumbled through the air, louder and louder. It was very severe weather. The Philistines became afraid, for they noticed that this was no ordinary thunderstorm. It was something unusual. Could it be that the mighty, the glorious God of Israel was helping that people again? They knew this God in his judgments. They did not dare march further into the land. They stood still. Finally, they fled. The Lord thundered upon the Philistines. When the Israelites saw this, and they pursued the dreaded and hated enemy, the Philistines were slain in great numbers. This day ended in a brilliant victory for the Israelites. The Philistines were driven out of the land with heavy losses. They dare not come back. How happy the Israelites were! The Lord gave deliverance, and he alone gave it. Samuel took a large stone, setting it upright. This was a monument, for the Israelites must never forget this deliverance. He gave this memorial stone a nice name, Ebenezer. Do you know what that name means? It means, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. Did you hear that? He doesn't say, I have helped, but the Lord has helped. So, God only is honored. The cities which the Philistines had taken from the children of Israel were again recovered by the Israelites. The enemy was driven from all places. Samuel was a courageous but also a God-fearing judge. He believed that the Lord would help. He was a champion of faith. The years hastened by. Israel again was free. Each year Samuel would journey throughout the land of Canaan. In every village, in every city where he visited, the people asked him for advice. They came to him with all their difficulties, and Samuel administered justice. When he returned from his journey, he went to Ramah, for there he lived with his wife and children. He had two sons, Joel and Abiah. However, Samuel was getting older. He became tired from these long journeys. Sometimes he hardly could do it. When his sons became old enough, he said to them, come, you can easily help me. You must become judges in the south of the land, in Beersheba. Then it will not be necessary for me to go there. So his two sons became judges. But it isn't long before Samuel hears complaining, for things are not going well. Both his sons are not honest. They took bribes. The rich people are helped. The poor people are not. The rich can give Joel and Abiah beautiful gifts, but the poor cannot give anything. How grieved Samuel is because of this. The old gray-haired Samuel sits in his home at Ramah. He shakes his head sadly. Why? Alas, he is thinking about his two sons, Joel and Abiah. He often prayed for them. He had hoped that they would be boys who would worship and fear the Lord. But they are deceivers and cheaters. Suddenly he frightens out of his melancholy reflections. Someone is knocking at the door. Visitors have come. The men who come inside are the elders of Israel. Why have they come? Samuel understands immediately that they have something on their mind. They come for a purpose, but he doesn't know what it is. Samuel is silent and waits. The elders are silent too. Really, they dare not speak about it, for it will be difficult for the old Samuel to listen to their errand. They look at each other and feel ashamed. Yes, look once, you see, they begin hesitatingly. We have come to talk with you. Again it is silent. Finally, they say everything freely. Sir, we will speak very frankly. You have become old. It is not so easy for you to continue to govern Israel, and your two sons, Joel and Abiah, yes, you also know they are not honest. They do not walk in your footsteps. We want to have a king. The other nations which dwell around us have kings. Oh, the important message is told. They hardly dare look at Samuel. Silence prevails. Then they look shyly at him and frighten. Deep wrinkles are upon his forehead. They see that he resents it. He is angry about it. Why? Weren't the elders permitted to ask for a king? Didn't all the other nations have their own kings? Israel is the only nation that didn't have a king. Come now, is that right? Didn't Israel have a king? Children, the people of Israel have a king, a very good king, a righteous king, a very mighty king, yes, the best king that can be found. In my thoughts, I see that you have an unbelieving look upon your face. Perhaps you are saying, that is not true. Israel has no king. Still, it is true. The Israelites have a king. Do you know who he is? The Lord is their king. The Lord reigns and rules over them. The Lord gives them his laws. The Israelites have a much better king than the nations around them. Their heavenly king certainly took care of them faithfully. He repeatedly helped them against the enemies. He had given them judges who delivered them from the many cruel enemies. In a word, God reigned over them. They had a theocracy. Theocracy means a nation governed by God. But Israel is no longer satisfied with that. No, they want an earthly king, a king whom they can see. Oh, they have desired a king for many years already. They thought about it and spoke with each other about it many times. But Samuel was their judge, and he was a good one. The Philistines were defeated, and prosperity prevailed during his leadership. When Samuel was still strong and robust, they didn't dare mention it. But now that Samuel is old, and his sons Joel and Abiah are deceivers, they must talk about it, which they do at this time. So they did consider Samuel. They didn't want to grieve him, neither did they want to offend him. But they do not give a thought to the fact that they are rejecting their heavenly king. They also are offending their heavenly king. That didn't trouble them a bit. Samuel really does not know what he must say, but he deals very wisely, for he asks the Lord for advice. "Lord, what answer must I give this people?" he pleads. "Wilt thou advise me so that I can give this people a good answer?" And the word of the Lord rings out, "Hearken unto the voice of the people, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me. Do they want a king? It is well, they shall have a king. However, they will not receive a king in my favor, but in my disfavor." Samuel tells the people what answer the Lord gave him. "Remember," says he, "you want to be like the heathen nations which live around us. Good, you will get your wish. But I warn you, the heathen kings are cruel men. They do not think first of all about the people, but they always think of themselves. Your king will do likewise. He will take your sons from your homes. They will not help you in your labors, but they will be forced to help him. Your daughters will be taken to work hard in his palace. He will take the best fields and vineyards from you and give them to his friends. Whatever he wants, he will take from you, and you must give it. You will be forced to do it. Yes, he will oppress you so much that you will not know what to do. You will pray and call to the Lord. You will plead for deliverance, but the Lord will not hear you. It will be your own fault, because you wanted this king. Therefore, I warn you out of love. Now you must know for yourself." He is silent. He looks at them honestly and uprightly. He withheld nothing, but said exactly what he had to say upon the command of the Lord. But the elders of Israel do not want to listen to good advice. Probably they thought that it will not be as bad as Samuel said it would be, and even better than they expect. "No," they say, "we want a king anyway. We want to be as the other nations. They have a king, and we also want a king. Our king will administer justice for us. If war comes, we will not have to wait for a judge, but we will have a king who can lead us in the battle." Samuel brings these words of the people to the Lord, and the Lord answers, "Hearken unto their voice, and make them a king." Thereupon Samuel lets the elders depart. He says, "You can go to your homes. You will hear more about this matter." They go away, happy and cheerful. They have gained their point. They are not in the least concerned about the fact that they have rejected the Lord and that they have grieved him. Do you all always try to have your own way too, boys and girls?